This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
In focus today, we're looking at counselling. There are times in everyone's life when things are not going to plan. We may feel sad, upset, angry, worried, depressed, distressed, or many other emotions. Sometimes we need help in dealing with our feelings. These days, counselling is an accepted way of getting that help. Today, we're speaking with Dr. John Tandos, a practicing psychologist, and Mary Magalotti, a psychologist and founder of Life Resolutions. Welcome.
Thank you.
So, can we get a little bit of background from both of you? Perhaps, Mary, should we start with you?
Sure.
You actually founded Life Resolutions. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Founded, big word. Really, all it means was that I started Life Resolutions' first private practice in January 2001 and been sort of built from there. There's now 12 different private practices in Melbourne, and we offer counselling to individuals, couples, families for a range of different presenting issues and certainly do a lot of work with the gay and lesbian community on different topics.
Okay. Mm. And Jonathan, oh, John.
Mm-hmm, yep.
you've been obviously doing this sort of work for a long time. You've managed to get a PhD.
Yeah, well, that side of things wasn't so therapeutic or counselling, though. That was a research PhD.
But all right.
Yeah, I've been in private practice since last year, but I've done work in sort of here and overseas as well, in sort of public psychiatry as well as sort of private settings. And my focus now is, I do lots of generalist work in private practice as a psychologist, and I have a couple of specialist kind of things I like to do, adolescents and GLBTIQ, of course. And I've adopted a much more kind of spiritual focus in my practice as I've gone along, and now I'm sort of involved in kind of coordinating a group in the APS as well. It's all about sort of spiritual and more existential types of ways of practicing. So,
just for those that don't know, Australian Psychological Society.
That's it.
That's the APS, yeah, that Australian Psychological Society.
We all speak in acronyms now.
Yeah, we sure do.
We really do. Do you think, I mean, we kind of, in our little introduction there, we kind of said, oh, you know, counselling has become something that's quite acceptable. Do you think that it is something that has a lot more acceptance than it used to have some years ago?
Absolutely. I think the stigma surrounding counselling and psychology has dropped significantly. Still more work to do in this area, of course, but I think more and more people are just recognising the benefits of going to see a psychologist. I might say here, a registered psychologist is different to a counsellor. Mm, unfortunately, absolutely. Anyone in Australia can call themselves a counsellor, so make sure you're seeing a registered psychologist. But it's typically at Life Resolutions, we deal with high-functioning people, hopefully like you and I, just really wanting to improve our lives, move forward in certain ways, be it personally or professionally. And so it has become so much more acceptable.
You're making a distinction between sort of a counsellor and a psychologist, and for very good reasons in terms of registration and things, I realise this. What's the difference, do you think? What's the difference? Can you perhaps give us a bit more insight into the difference between, say, psychiatry and psychology? That's probably, because I think sometimes that's where that stigma thing comes in as well, isn't it? People think of mental illness it's not a difficult thing to get over.
I get this question a lot from sort of clients. And what's the difference between you and a psychiatrist? Well, I mean, the most important thing is that psychiatrists are medically trained. They do their 6-year MBBS and then they do their specialty in psychiatry. And it's the emphasis is, I guess, more on psychopathology or, you know, sort of mental illness. And certainly as psychologists, we deal with that as well. But we don't prescribe drugs. Psychiatrists do.
Is that the easy way out?
I don't know.
Different group, though, isn't it? Different presentation, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's well, I mean, for me personally, I mean, I deal with people who have what you maybe would consider to be in the kind of the mental illness kind of spectrum, and then also people who are very high functioning and who also come to therapy, not just because they're going through difficult feelings, but also for personal development as well. So I think that's a really sort of important application of sort of, you know, psychotherapy or counselling as well, that people, you don't have to have something wrong with you. You can come if you want to sort of develop yourself and better understand yourself and explore yourself.
Mm. Mm. I've been studying in the States in the last couple of years doing organisational psychology.
All right.
So different aspects, so not the clinical, but in terms of sort of the leadership and with management, particularly there, going to a life coach or a therapist or a psychologist to actually develop one's skills in dealing with people, and it's totally accepted. In fact, it's seen as a very positive thing. So I guess that trend will probably come here too, considering
we
do follow
started.
The States.
I'd like to see it moving more in this direction, like the States, as you're comparing. Certainly in Australia, I mean, most large organisations have an EAP, so an employee assistance program. So Life Resolutions, for example, has some EAP with organisations where we are providing the professional support and career transitions and looking at executive coaching and life coaching and more of the organisational issues. Culture within an organisation as well is always an important one to be looking at. So.
And I guess on the other side of the coin with employees too, there's the health and safety side of things too, that employers I guess have an obligation to provide all sorts of health care to their employees, and mental health care is part of that parcel as well. So is that an area that you think is growing?
Yeah, absolutely. I think more employers are recognising that whether someone's dealing with personal or professional issues, it's sometimes going to intrude on their work capacity and their level of productivity, and they recognise that when one is happier within themselves, they're going to be functioning better at work, and the work environment's going to be a lot more enjoyable, which obviously affects the success of that organisation. Mm. So they're willing to be supporting their employees for this reason.
I get stuff like post-traumatic stress, a lot of people that are working in the services, you know, police, fire, all those sorts of things too. I guess nowadays that's almost seen to be accepted, that if there's been some major event, there's sort of some post-traumatic counselling for people
who've
been involved. Mm. Unlike our dads and granddads who are in the war or whatever and never talked about it.
Yeah.
I guess, though, I mean, that sort of post-traumatic stress stuff is probably the extreme. Even just
daily stress.
Stress. And just people getting on in the workplace and, you know, being able to work together and conflict, you know, minor conflict resolution, really. I guess, is any conflict minor? I don't know. But even those, what we might term as minor things, can be helped a great deal, it would seem, by a professional person rather than by managers trying to sort things out themselves.
I think things kind of need to happen at both levels often, or I guess it depends on the situation, but certainly if there's a squabble happening between two employees, well, you know, if as an individual coming to me in counselling around a sort of work-related issue, I'd sort of deal with the person and how they're processing the feelings and their strategies and whether or not they're being assertive and that kind of thing. But certainly it may still be appropriate for there to be some kind of intervention at the level of management. But that a lot of that will depend on the organisational structure and the sort of the mindset and the kind of, you know, the ethic of the person who's sort of, and where they feel they need to intervene. And that may be a level at which a sort of consultant or someone, you know, like an EAP or something might need to actually come in and address that at that sort of organisational level as well. So there's multiple kind of things.
But I think in this day and age, the sort of life we all seem to be living is very fast paced. Even outside of organisations, just as individuals, I think there's ways that we can look at being a little bit more relaxed or dealing with stress in a more productive manner than how some of us do from day to day. So there's various things that psychologists can assist you in, whether it's in your individual counselling or, for example, I know Life Resolutions has a group coming up where we're dealing with that very issue of stress and how to do with that. And because stress can move into all sorts of areas of difficulty in a relationship. It can lead to sometimes less sexual function. It can lead to low mood. And this obviously has a ripple effect in your personal life.
Absolutely. We're speaking with Dr. Jonathan Tandos and Mary Magalotti, who are both psychologists, and perhaps after this we'll talk a little bit more about the more specific GLBTI issues that might come your way as well. Joy 94.9, this is Saturday Magazine. Joy 94.9, Saturday Magazine with Leanne and Carol.
And this morning in our In Focus segment, we're looking at counselling, and joining us is Dr. John Tandos, who's a practising psychologist, and Mary Magalotti, who is the principal psychologist and founder of Life Resolutions. So before the break, we're talking about counselling, going to people, some of the things, but let's perhaps now talk more specifically about the GLBTI community. Both of you mentioned earlier that you have clients from within the community. What sorts of things, John, do people come and see you about?
Oh, wow, you mean particularly GLBTI of clients?
What makes us potentially different from the broader community?
Well, I mean, a lot of the presenting issues will be the same in terms of, you know, anxiety, sort of work stress, depression, life's not going quite the way, you know, you want it to, and all that sort of thing. But I think within the GLBTI community, we're talking about a particular kind of context of problems that are kind of unique. Like, for instance, at the moment, I'm getting a lot of gay men in their late 30s who want a serious relationship, and they're sort of sick of the usual...
Settle down.
Yeah, they're sort of tired of the usual, routine or what they might find just sort of out on the scene, and, you know, they're wanting something a little bit more serious and also interested in just personal sort of an emotional development. So that's sort of a big one for me. The transgender people I work with, unique issues around things like, you know, whether or not they pass, about sort of staying hidden versus allowing themselves to be exposed and be the people that they really, you know, want to be. Mm-hmm. There are particular issues around particular sort of sexual issues. I mean, but then you get into the kind of, more general sort of issues that you might find in any client, you know, like relationship stress and sort of conflict and, old traumas, you know, old wounds from childhood, all of that too. Mm-hmm. I think particularly one of the things that really characterises, gay and lesbian clients is this issue of shame. Mm. It's a unique type of issue that, you know, you don't maybe get, not certainly not in the same way from other
kinds of clients.
Well,
we were talking earlier with Kenton Miller about one of the AFL footballers potentially coming out this week on the Footy Show, and then sort of a report that perhaps he was changing his mind because he was coaching junior football. So is the shame, is that part of perhaps a manifestation of that shame or a fear or all of those sorts of things? We don't know what's going on for him, but it's just sort of interesting.
In that scenario, the sort of the decision to not come out because you want to coach.
Yeah, well, he is coaching junior football and thought it may impact.
It reminds me of a certain something that a former premier said a few weeks ago.
So I guess they are issues that heterosexual population don't have to deal
don't
with.
Encounter.
Well, that's an interesting fact, though, isn't it? They don't seem to worry about it so much, and yet, statistically, there are more heterosexual men abusing girls than there are homosexual men abusing boys. I mean, statistically, that's a fact as far as I'm concerned. I believe that to be absolutely the case.
Yeah, so it's around those myths, and I guess that's some of the perceptions that people may have themselves when they come to talk about the reality versus the myths and the perceptions.
Well, it's interesting. I find that with the GLBTI community, the presenting issues that they're coming into counselling for, I don't find it all that dissimilar to the heterosexual community. Human beings dealing with facing various things in their life, whether it's low mood or depression or anxiety or relationship issues or sexual issues or career issues, similar types of... The only times I've seen differences are when someone is coming out, so going through the process of coming out and understanding about their sexuality, or a lesbian couple wanting to have children and all that goes with that, and some of the things that they're needing to confront, and sometimes lesbian bed death, that sort of thing, and similar to what you were saying, John, in regards to males of a certain age wanting to, I'm seeing that shift also, wanting to find a partner and have a more stable relationship now, but other than specific topics such as those, I'm finding that the issues really don't differ to the heterosexual community.
I guess if you're grieving or you're stressed about anything, you're doing it the same way no matter what your sexuality.
That's
is really the issue, isn't it?
Well, I think Mary said the word human. These are human issues, and we're all sort of human beings. So, we're going to be familiar with, a lot of the stuff that's presented to us, from whoever's presenting it.
Do you find that your GLBTI clients often feel more comfortable if they know that their counsellor is also from that community?
Yes, I think that, and even for myself as a gay person, I would be much more comfortable to know, is my psychologist gay, or if they're not, are they gay friendly? And I want to feel confident and comfortable about that before I'm seeing a psychologist, and I find the same within our community, absolutely. Because even if the psychologist isn't gay, you need to be comfortable to go along talking about issues within your life or same-sex relationship where you're not going to have any concerns about not necessarily being judged, but the concerns about the psychologist perhaps not understanding the cultural community.
Have to spend the time explaining.
That's right. That's not what you're there for.
50 minutes,
That's right.
You've got so much time.
That's exactly right.
Exactly.
Or censoring yourself either, I guess, self-censoring, because you want to feel relaxed and free to talk openly about what's going on.
It's an interesting issue. I've had a couple of sort of psychologist colleagues who are, gay or lesbian, and the issue of, do we advertise ourselves as such? And because is it relevant? And that's an interesting issue for me, because I work in sort of two different practices. In one practice, I tend not to see so many GLBTIQ people. I don't promote myself, for that practice as as a gay therapist myself. But in, my sort of more central, sort of Carlton-type area, I do. And it's kind of like, I guess for me, I was in that sort of practice wanting to attract in a certain kind of client as well. And it's sort of, I guess it comes down to this issue of self-disclosure as well, like how much of ourselves are we prepared to reveal? And I think certainly with gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender clients, it's valuable. It's appropriate for us to reveal that about ourselves.
Is it a disadvantage in any way to disclose in the broader sense for your broader clientele? Have you found that any disadvantage in disclosure?
I don't know. Well, I guess I've been on Joy a couple of times now too, and and
so you're world famous now, John.
But Mary has sort of been on before as well over the years, and we're here effectively outing ourselves as therapists and. That's, well,
outing ourselves as therapists, John.
Well, does that...
as therapists or gay therapists?
Oh, I mean outing ourselves as gay.
I try not to let too many people know that I'm a shrink. It puts people off. It scares them away.
At parties. Can you read my mind?
Oh, that's exactly...
Is that more controversial than
what
being...
What do you do? I'm a psychologist. Oh, does that mean you can read my mind? No, I'm not a clairvoyant.
I just say I can't be bothered. Why would I bother?
Watch your space.
I guess, if clients and... who didn't know me to be, a gay therapist, happened to hear me on this radio station and happened to make a decision, if they're already seeing me, that was an issue, well, I would just have to address it, and that's just what it is.
We're speaking with John Tandos and Mary Magalotti, and both of them are psychologists. And perhaps when we have another little music track, we'll talk a little bit more about how people find a therapist that suits them, basically.
Sounds good.
Speaking about counselling generally, and a little bit about, perhaps the specifics in terms of gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender issues and so on, I think it would be good, though, to maybe finish off by having a bit of a chat about how do you find the right psychologist? How do you find the person that is going to be right for the counselling that you want?
It's difficult sometimes because, typically someone might start by, looking in the Yellow Pages or something, or have a friend that says, refers a psychologist. But I think when there might be a very skilled and experienced psychologist, But there needs to be a bit of a connection between the therapist and client, and you can't always know for sure that you're going to have that connection until you meet them in the first session or even have a few sessions. And so this is why it's important to ask some questions on the phone. What style of counselling do they use? Look, these are the types of issues I want to be discussing in counselling, and these are the goals I have that I'm wanting to achieve. Do you think you can assist in this area? Have you worked in this area before? And to know that, you know, it might take a couple of different psychologists before you find the right one. And what we try and do at Life Resolutions is sometimes allow you to, if you're not connecting with that first one, maybe then, you know, go to a different one that might be more suited. But we try and get that right from the start. And I really think the key element is asking those questions so you're matched up with the right person.
A good counsellor would probably get to realise very quickly whether they, in fact, themselves are going to be right for this person. If you weren't, as a counsellor, if you weren't actually connecting, if you felt there was a problem with that client, would you quickly refer them to someone else?
That's an interesting question.
I mean, that must happen, it surely.
I think any good therapist knows their boundaries, and if there are certain people who present perhaps with certain issues, or if you're finding that maybe the way you're feeling is perhaps compromising what you're doing with the person or interfering with it in some way, then it would be a responsible thing to actually... Well, first of all, debrief on that whole process with the client. You don't just cut them off.
No.
And then sort of talk through those issues and help engage with them in finding someone else more suitable. What do you think, Mary?
Yeah, from my own personal experience, I've rarely had a client that I didn't engage with. And I think it's about certainly the style of counselling that I use, and we won't go into different styles today. But I think I come back to that human relationship at the end of the day, and I spend a lot of time in that first session, regardless of what they're coming in to talk about, just engaging, connecting. And so I give out a lot of energy doing that, and I think that assists and allows that person to feel comfortable to move forward with me. So I haven't had that as an issue so much.
But it obviously is partly up to the client to say, hey, tell me a little bit about you as well as a counsellor. How can you help me?
Well, this is what I tell my clients. Yeah. I say, let's spend a couple of sessions getting to know each other, and this is also your opportunity to get to know me.
Yeah.
I don't expect you to just give me your trust. It's earned, so please ask me what you need to ask me. Mm. We'll see how we go. And usually people like to hear that.
Gives them an out, or gives them flexibility. Mm. Yeah.
So in terms of... someone sort of having any sort of sudden real issues or anything like that, Lifeline, crisis sort of counselling, gay and lesbian switchboard, all of those sort of things would be the sort of places that you would perhaps suggest if they obviously can refer you on to counsellors as well.
Right, but all those telephone lines that you've just mentioned, 24-hour telephone lines, are there for those immediate... they're there for that immediate assistance, and
you
can refer you on.
You don't
need an appointment. You can have some telephone counselling. Obviously, there's that limit, but then you can be referred on to an organisation that can assist you with further counselling if you're wanting that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very important.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.